Hi and hello and welcome to the RBR Top Music Podcast. My name is Steve Hurley and as always I'm joined by the creator of the RBR Top Music Instagram page, Jordan Murray. Hello.
Hello. Oh, hello.
Where each week, in true RBR fashion, we're bringing you classic and new album reviews. It's our mission to cut through the noise to discuss the sound. On the RBR.music radar this episode, we're going to be discussing Eli Paperboi Reed's seventh album, Down Every Road. Born in 1982 as Eli Hussock, this American singer-songwriter has brought something new to our ears. Over to you, Jordan.
Down Every Road by Eli Paperboi Reed. Throughout his career as an R&B revivalist, Eli Paperboi Reed has centred his attention on the soul made in the back half of the 1960s and the early years of the 70s, a period that happens to coincide with Merle Haggard's ascension to the upper echelon of American music. And the reason I point out Merle Haggard is because this is pretty much a covers album. Well, it is a covers album of Merle Haggard hits. Merle Haggard, if you don't know, is one of the most successful singers in the history of country music. Few artists have been as popular and widely admired as Mr. Haggard. Merle Haggard, one of the most successful singers in the history of country music, whose songs about his scuffling in his early life and his time in prison. Can you remember what prison, Steve? San Quentin Prison? Johnny Cash performed. Merle Haggard actually spent 3 years in there for burglary. So he is a real life outlaw. So the genre of his music is outlaw country, I guess you could say. So yeah, that's a bit of history about Merle Haggard. So every song is a Merle Haggard song. So during this period, in the early 60s and 70s, country and soul intermingled in a variety of fashions, but Mr. Haggard didn't quite partake. He sang blues and jazz. He wrote a pioneering song about interracial romance called Irma Jackson, but he didn't delve into the gritty, funky sounds emanating out of the South. Despite this, Eli Paperboi Reed's decision to record a full-length tribute to Merle Haggard not only seems right, it seems logical. And I say that because there were so many country bands, let's say, moving into funk, like country funk, country swamp, all those sort of genres. Merle Haggard never really touched it. So he's got the bare bones of the music, Eli Reed, to create what was being created in the early 60s and 70s. With the blueprints of Merle Haggard's works, and he can cherry pick his favourite songs, which he obviously has done. Merle Haggard's music encompassed so many different sounds and styles and emotions that they could easily be rearranged into retro soul numbers. So, like I say, this is precisely what Reed does on Down Every Road. Sticking with the material Haggard wrote and recorded for Capitol Records. All but one of the songs here can be found on the landmark 1996 box set, which, if I just look at my notes, because I can't... Which is actually, that's the one, isn't it? That's Down Every Road, 1962 to 1994. Yeah, so that's why he's obviously called it that. Yeah. So Reed recasts these songs as slow burners. There's some ravers. I say ravers. There's some sort of high... up-tempo, funky sort of numbers. I suppose you could rave to them if you're that way inclined. Yeah, the 12 songs here have the punch of a stack of old 45s. You know, the record. You know when you're just flicking through the records, throwing one on? Well, I suppose, not like I ever did that, to be honest with you, but it's like putting your streaming service on shuffle or something, or creating your own playlist of your favourite tracks of a particular artist, and yeah, it just works great. Most of them, well, Steve, you probably know this and you're probably absolutely fuming, but most of them clock in well under 3 minutes, the songs. Which
I think you'll find the whole album is 33 minutes long, 12 tracks. I've already done my maths, and yes, a bit fuming on that, but you know.
Well, I think I think it gives the album quite a swift momentum.
Well, we talked about this a few times, and away for the jovial side of it. I think obviously with it being a covers album, you can't really cover a song and make it longer, really, can you? If you're going to do a fairly kind of straight cover,
well, you could. Well, yeah, not if you're going to do a straight cover, but you could like open it up to a bit of a jam session, couldn't you?
Yeah, but obviously music from the 50s, 60s, you know, before, and you know, it was, I suppose, only really the turn of the sort of late 60s, 70s, a lot of tracks, you know, rock and roll and country tracks, they were 2 minutes long, 1 minute 90, 2.5 minutes. The short tracks, we're a lot more used to that 4 or 5 minutes in modern songwriting. I guess that's just part of the progression. But yeah, if you're covering someone else's song and you're trying to be fairly, you know, you're trying to tribute it more than kind of, you know, rewrite it, you can't make it any longer. So I forgive him because it's not really his timing, is it?
I'm not a songwriter, so I have absolutely no idea, but I'm just going to say this anyway. I wonder if it's harder to write a shorter song to get your point across, because a longer song would be harder because you've got to keep the interest of the listener, but you can put like all sorts in a longer song, like repeat choruses, change the tempo and stuff. Not to say the tempo doesn't change in these songs, but yeah, I think a shorter song, like the Beatles, when they were coming out with shorter songs, it seems a very hard craft to make it memorable and so short. But anyway,
Well, I suppose, yeah, that's your segment of. No, I know what you mean. I mean, I think the first thing that I picked up on this album, and I'll be dead honest, I didn't know who Paperboy was. I wasn't really aware on any real level on Haggard as well. Actually, I was researching Reed, and then obviously went to read a bit more about Haggard. I mean, you're right, he had an interesting life. I think 5 marriages, 6 children. I think he started smoking marijuana when he was in his 40s. I think he famously partied for 5 months in the 80s after buying a ton of cocaine. Like, obviously quite a character, and I can understand maybe why Reed has probably got, you know, you wouldn't just do a cover album without really sort of understanding the artist behind the original, would you? So I can certainly see that musical attraction to kind of this, I don't know, clearly quite...
The wild man of yesteryear.
Yeah, definitely.
He seems more like a mythical character.
Yeah, definitely. I think
rather than a real person.
And we like that. We like the extra narrative and illustration.
And it was before all social media, which I like, because it's not... So it's like folk songs that get passed down generation to generation. Tales of Haggard will get distorted and exaggerated and changed slightly, and just to make people laugh. A bit like Keith Moon with all the crazy stuff he used to get up to. Some of it is exaggerated, some of it clearly isn't, but it just adds to all the flavour and the mystery surrounding the artists, I think you completely lose...
If it was an artist today, it'd be a meme on TikTok, wouldn't it? So it's quite nice to have that sort of lost allure. I think the first thing that you hear from this album, there's definitely a maturity and an aging to how he puts it across. I got a lot of tones from the era that it comes from.
I don't think he could. You said this was his 7th album. I don't think he could have done this as a debut or his 3rd album. Like, he's learned his craft, Eli Paperboy Reed. Which is proofs in the pudding, because I think this album's quite remarkable. Work that Merle Haggard's done and how far he's taken it, and how short the songs are, but it's just filled to the brim of just strong sounds, like with the brass and backing singers. And his voice, we haven't really mentioned his voice, but his voice on this is is something to behold. He's really working hard. All his different pitches and stuff.
Well, he seems very versatile in his vocal ability as well. I mean, there's a couple of times I had to sort of almost, you know, when you come to an end of an album that you don't know that well and you sort of, it goes on to the next album. There's sometimes I had to kind of almost check myself a few times because I do think he's got great versatility in his voice and the way he delivers this. And I think I could hear that old school soul coming through him. Now, I suppose I'd need to understand Reed a bit more. I know you might be able to answer this, but is it Reed or is it Reed kind of filtering Haggard's history? I don't know. You've listened to more albums than I have of him. Is this sound something that he's got within him, or has he created for this covers album?
I think he packs a lot of imagination into this record, which is a far cry. I'm not saying Merle Haggard hasn't put imagination into his songs, but I think when Merle Haggard sings from complete and utter experience, Reed is singing more from, he's trying to embody Haggard as, I can believe in his lyrics, let's put it that way, and the way Eli is putting them across. He's turning Mama Tried and It's Not Love But It's Not Bad into instant soul romps, while he teases blues music with If We Make It Through December and Today I Started Loving You Again.
Yeah.
So he cuts through, in a good way, he cuts through all sorts of genre,
yeah,
but keeps it primarily soul, where Haggard was more blues, like pushing into jazz.
It's clever because, like we said, I think I used the term like a straight cover. It's not really a straight cover, is it? It's a straight cover lyrically, and he's not rewritten, you know, there's no remixing. It's just his version of this.
Yeah, it's like I said before with like folk tales, like folk songs where they got passed down and things got changed a little bit. He's not changing the lyrics. They are what, because I think the source material is fantastic. What Merle Haggard has written is, he is like a poet with a guitar. Yeah. Merle Haggard, well, I suppose quite a lot sing guitar, aren't they? But I mean, you buy into Merle Haggard because he's lived it.
Yeah.
And as I said before, yeah.
No, I was going to say, yeah, you're exactly right. I think
you get... I think Reed places equal emphasis on his vocals and guitars, making sure to keep the melody and message of the songs. I think that's what we're trying to, our point is. He keeps, as much of the imagination he puts into these wildly creative brass parts and backing singers and his vocal range, the message of the songs is still in the forefront, and letting Haggard's songbook, I believe, shine through to the listener.
Yeah, and I think you can feel that. And then, again, not being a massive fan to date of Reed and knowing too much about him, I think you can see all these really classy nods to, obviously, you know, music that inspired him. I heard bits of sort of Wilson Pickett in there. I could hear,
yeah,
there's Otis in there. I even said there's a little bit of early Jackson 5. I'm not talking about the sort of the funky sort of you know, numbers. That soulful kind of vibe is definitely definitely
present.
And it's an impressive nod to a yesteryear of music, because soul music isn't produced like this anymore, really, or you know, in a commercial pop charts type sort of thing. So obviously, if you are talented enough, like clearly Reed is, to be able to put it out like that, I think, you know, you've got to nod the past and celebrate what's gone before. So it's a real, for me, it's quite a really clever album, because you got all these lyrics that don't belong to you that you're reworking into a different genre. It must be a very tricky concept. It's not like writing a song, which I'm sure is very difficult in itself, but it's almost like refurbing a house that already exists with beautiful features that you want to change and adjust. And, you know what I mean? It's
you a put real your stamp skill. On it. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And I thoroughly enjoyed the album. There's a couple of tracks that didn't catch me as much as others. And then there's some that you just get, like you said, because they're really short, you get lost for like 6, 7, 8 minutes at a time. I went for a walk listening to this, and I kind of like, you know, when you walk and all of a sudden you're in a place you sort of hadn't really recognised you'd walk to. That's how it really takes you on a lot kind of well, not quite that far, just the cemetery up the road, you know. But it took me somewhere else for a short period of time, and I enjoyed it. Sadly, there are a couple of tracks that in the middle of the album that break it up a little bit for me, and they're not particularly bad or anything, just didn't enjoy them as much. But otherwise, yeah, thoroughly enjoyed, and I really enjoyed understanding the depth and the quirks of where this album's come from, and you know what you know. I'd be very, very interested now to hear what he does next. You know, what other inspirations does he have, or is he go back to writing songs as he did before?
Yeah. I probably say this every time we do a podcast, but if he has the full backing of a brass band and the string section and stuff, I think seeing him live will be quite a spectacle.
Oh yeah, definitely. He'd be one that would sneak onto the list, and I'm guessing he's not. I don't believe he's got a massive following in the UK. He seemed to have a lot of accolades, sort of, you know, being, you know, music industry accolades. I don't get the impression he's sort of, you know, selling out open air arenas or anything. So it's probably a good one to get to for less money and the ease of a more casual gig than, you know, a Nebworth.
That's my point, really, because it's not that big. Like, and I mean this respectfully, to tour with a huge band, like with a brass section, string section, and everything that's on this album, is going to cost a lot of money to move these people around and put them in hotels. And as he's not a huge, huge name, I think it's going to be a pity if he doesn't manage to present these songs as they are on the album on a stage, if that makes sense. But yeah, I hope he does. I hope he gets that chance to perform them as he wants to perform them.
Yeah.
Well, not as he wants to perform them, as I want to hear them.
Well, I was quite interested. I noticed his latest record label was Yep Rock Records, which I think a bit of a quirkier record label. I think they really drive artists that don't want to be kind of pigeon, you know, hold into kind of a certain genre. And I was reading Billy Bragg's on there, on the label. I think Paul Weller is as well, Nick Lowe. So not a sort of, you know, not a small record label by any means, but again, a record label with a bit of character. So again, you're starting now to see that this chap, and again, as a complete novice to him, he's clearly, there's a quirk, isn't there? He wants to do things his way. And again, I hadn't really done my... whenever you recommend anything, I always listen to it before I do the looking into it, because I want to sort of take a raw first impression. He doesn't look anything like I thought he would do. I've not seen too much of his sort of, character traits or anything, but I can imagine he's just not as you imagine him to be, you know, because he, on this album particularly, I mean, you know, it could have been Wilson Pickett album. It really could. It's got all that history, and yeah, I was probably expecting to see an older guy with more wrinkles on his face from the life that he's led, from the way he sings. But actually, I think he's only 40, this guy, or 41, I think, 40, 41. Looks more like sort of a bit Elvis-y, actually, I thought. But really cool. I'm definitely going to now dig more into him and listen to his sort of back catalogue. As I said, this is his seventh album, his debut album, which was Walking and Talking, is that right? In 2005.
I've not got his discography up. I don't know. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I think that might be a bit of an EP. Roll With You, I think, was his first proper full album. I'm going to go back and listen to more. I suppose it's at this point of every pod, George, we put our rubber stamp our RBR.music review. Where are we leaving this one, Jordan? Yeah, what was our star rating?
So, yeah, I am with you with there's a few songs that don't quite hit the mark. And I do think they fit into the album. It's not the facts that they seem misplaced. I just don't think they're on the money, because a lot of the songs on this album are so good that when there's a slight misstep, a slight slip, it's very noticeable. That being said, I'm going to give this 4.5 out of 5. It loses half a star because of the very slight missteps. And 4.5 is, you know, it's a fabulous score.
Yeah, well, I can't think many times you've really given out the 5. So 4.5 is very much at the top end of what you deliver. So 4.5 for Mr. Reed. Well done. So it is at... Well, yeah, well, very well done. It is at this point we do our feature, which is the good, the bad, and the rad. And as it says in the tin, it is a good track, a bad track, and a particularly rad track. So I'm going to start with the good track this episode. And I went with I'm Going to Break Every Heart I Can. We liked this one, didn't we, Jord? It was a really sort of solid track. I think we both sort of went to this one quite quickly when we did our preamble before recording. What did you like about it?
Yeah, I like the whole section. I like his vocal range, from his getting his point across, or Mel Haggard's point across. He's encompassing the passion of Mel Haggard, but with his vocal stylings are just exemplary on this. This, I think, is a standout piece of his vocal range. And not only that, the backing singers and the horn, I keep on talking about the horn section, but I'm very impressed with the horn section. The horn section just go off on just, it takes you on a musical ride. And for only like 2:25, is that right? Yeah, there's a lot going on in that song. And maybe it's cut short, because it lasts as long as it needs to last, but it is, like you say, like a Wilson Pickett sort of song, like a 45. You throw your record on and it's just a blast of pure magic. And it does take you back to the back half of 60s, early 70s. Well, I say take you back. We weren't around then, but you know what I mean? To albums and singles that were around then.
Yeah, 100%. It's got a brilliant bit of guitar in it as well, actually, halfway through.
Yeah.
Really cool riff sort of appears. And
it's him on guitar.
Yeah, I was going to say. I know it sounds weird, but it felt like it was him. I know it sounds a weird thing to say when I'm not seeing this being performed, so I wouldn't have known, but it fitted really well. So, yeah, really, really good track, and definitely one to possibly start with if you want to start your journey with this album. I was quite passionate about the bad track, and I will lead with the bad track as well, if we make it through December. And I suppose I can't be too critical of Eli, because he didn't write the lyrics. I just didn't like it, and I thought it was a bit on the nose. It was a bit predictable. It's a bit simple. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be disrespectful to anyone. I just didn't have.
Well, you're doing a good job about being disrespectful,
Maya. Well, the contrast is, we've just said about the good track, how busy it was. I felt this was, like, far too simple. And on an album, like I said, the first, I think it's maybe six.
I think this track was to let things breathe a little bit, because there's a lot of, and I don't mean this in a bad way. A lot of the tracks are quite busy or just full of funk and soul. So I think this was just to catch your breath again. But the same for me. I think it missed the mark.
You can point at Reed as well. I think the arrangement just is a bit odd, because it's got these really cool kind of like horns and, you know, this brass band kind of like, and it does feel like 1960 soul. And then the tempo kind of radically changes within like 5-6 seconds, and it's a bit mismatch. I've listened to it a few times because I wanted to try and like it and really understand it. Lyrically for me, and that's not his fault, it was just a bit simple and on the nose, and the arrangement just didn't excite me. So that is our bad track. And as I've been greedy and stolen the first two, I'll pass the rad track to you, Jord.
So the rad track is Mama Tried. Just got me hooked. It's the first track on the album, and I was like, wow, because I'm aware of Merle Haggard, and Mama Tried is probably one of his most famous tracks. I didn't realise it was a covers album, believe it or not, when I first put it on. So I was streaming it, and I was like, oh, let's listen to this. This is a new album. Or it was at the time. No, it still is in a sort of way. Unless you're listening in the future, then it is not a new album. It's just rambling on. So I was listening to it, and I was like really getting into it. And then I was like, I recognise these lyrics. What? All right. And then as the album progressed, I was like, I reckon all these songs, as I've pointed out, Merle Haggard is pretty massive. Is a country star in America. And I don't mind country music, and I am aware of Merle Haggard. So when it actually dawned on me that Mama Tried was Merle Haggard's piece, I was like, this is how much work Eli Reid is put into this cover, changing it to this soul funk that Merle Haggard never really touched on as a genre. And I'd also like to point out, we talked on our first pod about covers and cover albums, and I said that I didn't really like cover albums because I think it's lazy. I think you should just come up with your own stuff. Now listening to this album, I've kind of come full circle, because it's so different to Merle. It stands as a fine piece of work that Eli Paperboy Reid has done himself with Merle Haggard's lyrics, showing off Haggard's songbook. So I believe if a cover is done correctly, it's just magical.
Yeah, I mean, we
as long as it's not a carbon copy. Like I said before, yeah, go on.
No, so we've always differed on this, and you've never been a covers fan. I've always liked the cover, but what I like about a cover is the rearrangement, and this album is about a full rearrangement, not just of a song, of a genre. I mean, it's really clever to take, you know, predominantly very country place songs and put this kind of really cool nod to 1960s soul, and I think this album will stand up with, it may not have the same sort of reputation that, you know, some of the greatest
listenership. Yeah.
Yeah, but it is as good as 80% of those amazing 60s soul albums of the era, and the ones we all love. And
I think it's a breathtaking album. It's just created so well, and for me, I mean, I'm not here to float my own boat or blow my own trumpet, but for me not to notice that it was Merle Haggard's song straight away, it's like he's done something special here, putting his own twist on it.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on, and I think that's a great place to leave it. So yeah, thanks, George. I've enjoyed this one. Good find. Please go and have a listen. Really cool. So, thanks to everyone for listening this episode. Take a listen to Down Every Road. I'm sure you will enjoy it, and hopefully you can hear why we've been so impressed by it. Please do tell people about rbr.music and this album. And you can find many, many other reviews and content on the rbr.music Instagram page, which Jordan painstakingly works on all hours of the day. Please do like, subscribe, and feel free to get in touch, leave any comments, and ask us to do a review. and we look forward to speaking with you again. Thanks, guys.
Who'd have thought Merle Haggard, a soul deeper?